Hey, y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones, where we talk about the science, the silence, and the systems that shape women's health, especially when the systems fail us. Today's episode is truly a global conversation. We're talking about perimenopause, menopause, PCOS, primary ovarian insufficiency, whatever else we can get to through, but through an internationally and a cultural lens, and really to ensure that those of us listening can really integrate cultural humility in not only taking care of patients, but, you know, seeking the help if you're a patient looking for someone. I'm very honored to be joined by Dr. Sathya Malik, who is a highly respected consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, a menopause and hormone specialist, and a global advocate for women's health. She's a British-trained OBGYN and a fellow of the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and she brings over three decades of clinical experience caring for women across the UK, Pakistan, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia, where she currently practices. Her work spans complex menopause care, PCOS, reproductive endocrinology, and women's health education, particularly in regions where the conversations about hormones, aging, and sexuality are still stigmatized and silenced. What makes her voice so important is not only her clinical expertise, but her lived understanding of how culture, religion, family expectations, and healthcare access intersect with women's hormonal health. She spent her career caring for women who are often told their suffering is normal or inevitable and to simply endure it, which we know we don't want it to. This conversation is really about visibility, validation, and cultural humility. So thank you, Dr. Malik, for joining us all the way from the other side of the world.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored, and I really love these conversations. And I keep mentioning that I am of a different generation, and I was part of the doctors to start off with, where I used to tell my patients, "Don't use TikTok to give you information." You know, I would be very upset with my patients. I heard on TikTok, and I would be so upset.
Well, but then they happen here all the time.
Yeah. But then I said, okay, if you can't win them, join them. So that was my motivation of, increasing my internet presence, in terms of, I said, okay, if everybody is talking about it, I have a few degrees and a vast experience to talk about.
Absolutely.
It. I think I should be doing it. So very grudgingly, I have come to the fore of this new internet revolution.
Well, I think it's great. And I love everything that you're doing. I came across your profile online, and I was just so intrigued that I felt like I had to reach out. Plus, you know, we obviously have some similarities, even though I'm in the U.S. My parents are from Pakistan, and you're also from Pakistan. And so I actually listened to one of your podcasts in Urdu, and I was trying to like stimulate my Urdu. Because my Urdu is very bad. But, you know, my parents spoke to me mainly in Punjabi growing up. And so that's why I still see patients.
Sorry, I was so glad for that conversation. You see, this lady, she's born and brought up in Canada. I mean, she's been in Canada for a long time, but she insists on calling herself the Urdu mom, and she does podcasts in Urdu. Uh-huh. And I'm very proud of my Urdu. You know, I used to win all competitions in poetry and things like that. So I was like, bring it on. Oh my God, I will use my medical concepts in Urdu. So I was very pleased about that.
It went really well. You do a lot of, what is it, shayari, the poetry?
Yes, I love Iqbal. I love, you know, of course, I know all the songs. And my mom is very upset that as to why I know the lyrics of songs like Noor Jahan and things like that. So when were you listening to it? You were supposed to be studying to be a doctor.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
I still know all the lyrics.
Yes, speaking of family and everything, my you know, obviously I have my gyno, I'm gyno girl on the internet. And so I like a good backstory. So tell us your backstory. What brought you into this women's health arena, specifically when we talk about OBGYN, sexual health, menopause, all these, you know, taboo topics that are still pretty taboo, I think, in other countries. Yeah.
So I always talk about starting from my mother. We are six sisters, and growing up in Pakistan in a household of six sisters, you can imagine the amount of, you know, problems that girls have and everything, psychological, physical, all of that. And I was the second in the lot, and I saw my mom, you know, dealing with all of us in her own best way possible, and most importantly, to really help to educate us. And I remember in all the problems, her standard line was, your job is to study. Don't worry about the problems and about the stresses and the stigmas and the abuse, I would use the word. You know, it'll get very, not nice, these conversations, but that's what you face, psychological and physical abuse. So I know women looking at my mom and then looking at the stories of my sisters. I grew up and supporting them and then my patients. So I always consider my patients as an autobiography. I have to listen to them. And because I really connect with their problems, I always believe that what a woman's story is, you have to know a story. And then we talk about PCOS and menopause. If you don't know their story and how you connect with them and share with them. So I think I was a kind of tuned or into doing this as a very young girl. Well, grew up into it, and then I said, this is what I have to do. And for me, every woman is a mother, and she is my mother. I see that, especially in my obstetrics, when I'm delivering a woman, I know that if my mom would have died during delivering me, I would never have achieved what I have achieved. So unfortunately, every 2 minutes, a woman dies giving birth to a baby still.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it was such a motivation for me. And I'm a advisor to 4 international charities. I have founded my own charity in Pakistan.
Wow.
And when we have time, we will talk about that. We have reached more than 8,000 women and hopefully saved their lives. But this is my main motivation for women's health, is that no woman should die.
Yeah.
No mother should die. And every mother should have a lot of support when her children are now in university and her husband is behaving like a kid also. Yeah. You know, so these women need a lot of support.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I can be one of them, I am here.
Oh, wonderful. Did wait, tell us about your charity, because I didn't know about this part.
Yes, so thank you very much. So as I said, I've seen the pain of mothers dying. Unfortunately, I practice in Pakistan, and as a junior doctor, I moved to UK. But I never forgot the country that made me what I am. And so even since a junior doctor, for the last 20 years, I have been returning to the mountains of Pakistan in the KPK province, taking my young girls to the most unknown places, do not mention to my husband. And we went there.
Take me next time.
We went there to train midwives, because I love midwives passionately, and I believe midwives save lives, especially in the areas where you only have midwives.
Yeah.
Even if you tell me, Dr. Sadia, why don't you work there? I won't be working there.
Mm-hmm.
So we only have midwives.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent last 20 years going to the mountains to train midwives.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been a huge supporter of this all my life. I've advised a Khidmat organization, APPS, so many organizations, but finally I said, I've got to do it myself. So in 2022, I co-founded Sakina Health Foundation in Pakistan, and where we use evidence-informed measures to go to the unreachable mothers.
Wow.
Because the statistics are just stacking up.
Yeah.
So if I give you 100% maternal mortality in the world, 100%, divided into 50-50, and 50% of this maternal mortality is burdened by only India, Nigeria, and Republic of Congo and Pakistan.
Wow.
So we have 4 countries shouldering the burden of 50% of the deaths.
Wow.
And the reason, at least in Pakistan, is that the 70% of these deaths do not happen in hospitals. They happen in homes and low-resource settings.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to come up with an idea to reach this 70% of the group in order to make a dent in these horrible statistics.
Yeah.
So according to international guidelines, and I am an advisor to WHO, I'm a stakeholder in the prevention of postpartum hemorrhage for the World Health Organization. And I have developed these clean birthing kits,
mm-hmm.
which include 6 items, 3 for the mother and 3 for the baby. For the mother, we have a clean birth, we have a clean sheet, which protects her from infection. Then we have misoprostol tablets, which you give to the mother after she has a baby, so it contracts the uterus. And the third thing is clean surgical gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, when you deliver in the mountains of Pakistan, the midwife will come, she'll take a bag of onions, throw the onions out, rotate that bag on their hand and do a vaginal examination with that. I think that causes infection, definitely.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. You just gobsmacked at this, isn't it?
So amazing.
So that's...
The resources are so limited.
Exactly. And this is a very common practice.
Right.
And that's why when I talked to WHO, meeting, I said to them that the problem is that you do not understand the meaning of nothing.
Right.
You know, when we start from nothing, nothing means no toilet, no room, no running water, no heating, nothing, no clothes for the baby. You know, the midwives have to remove a layer of their body to actually cover the baby.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Did not know that.
So the nothing is not understood by the world to then help the nothing.
Yeah.
So that's three for the mother. And for the baby, we have a surgical knife. We have a cord clamp, clean surgical clamp, and a chlorhexidine cream. Because if the midwife will not have it, shall I put you through the quiz? Because I do this mean thing of asking this question. That if I, Samina, invite you to the mountains of Pakistan, and then we're having a great time, both of us, and we get lost. And now you are alone because I kindly left you alone.
Oh.
And now somebody tells, Dr. Samina, we're happy that you're in the mountain and this baby has delivered. So what are you going to do? How will you help that baby? So the baby has delivered. Now take me through what will happen next.
I mean, I guess you have to clean the baby off, right? You have to wipe the baby off.
Okay.
The placenta is already out, probably, I'm sure. Yeah.
With the baby?
Yeah.
So now you have a baby and placenta attached to it.
No.
So what are you
No, you have
to
clamp the cord, obviously. The baby's out, right? You clamped the cord already.
How are you going to cut the cord?
I guess you're right. You have to have the instruments. You have to have something to, compress the bleeding and then cut. So there's no scissors?
Yeah. No.
No scissors. Yeah. Nothing, huh? There's not anything to compress.
Nothing.
Well, what about like a tie? Can you tie it off?
Okay, tie it with something. What do you have?
I mean, I'll take a Nala and tie it. Right? Can you do that?
Good. Yeah. Very no. good. Yeah. 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 So to take a thread out of the Nala. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great.
And you tie it in.
How clean is it? Isn't it?
I know. Yeah.
That thread is so clean.
Right.
Anyway, you've got the tie. Great. Now cut it.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. Is there a knife available to cut it?
You are not allowed to use the knife because the mother-in-law, the knife is clean, park, and the baby is palit. So you cannot use this knife on the baby.
Oh, so you can't use any knives?
No, you cannot because they are used for...
What about any scissors?
They don't have scissors.
I guess I'd try to rip it with my hands. Is there nothing to cut it with?
I think something the man uses.
Or just a razor?
Yeah.
A razor? Yeah.
Where is the razor? So you ask the children, or you ask the mother, what does your husband use as a razor? Where is it?
Yeah, what are they?
Where is it?
In the bathroom, right?
There is no bathroom. They don't have toilet.
Oh, wow.
So where is it?
Oh, okay. Probably in his bedroom.
There's no bedroom. This is the room where they all live, eat, sleep. There's only one room. It's a shack, right? So he keeps it outside.
Oh,
where does he shave?
Wow.
Where does he shave? Outside.
Probably outside then, huh?
Oh. Where he has the animals.
Oh, so
he puts it on the top on the tree. So the kids can't get to
it.
Right?
Yeah.
So then when you say, can I have a razor? The kids will run, and they will say, we can help you. It's on the top of the tree. And what is at the bottom of the tree? The animals.
Oh,
you got
wow.
your razor.
So,
you
yeah.
asked for a razor. You got it. Now what have you given to the baby? Tetanus. You have just introduced tetanus to this baby. That is why Pakistan is now.
Because you probably can't. Because you said there's no running water,
there's
right?
No
so you can't clean the razor.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So now,
now
Pakistan is in the top three countries in the world with the highest rates of newborn deaths, behind only India, Nigeria, and then Pakistan.
Wow.
Top three countries in the world. Imagine how many countries there are in this world because of these practices.
Yeah.
And see, Pakistan is a rural country, isn't it? And we are talking about the 70% of the deaths over there. So because of these practices, we have now more than 90 centers in Pakistan. We are working in every single province. And I can tell you that we work with the midwives. We know their practices. And this is the practice. They have not seen, this group of midwives has not seen a cord clamp. And this our biggest challenge has been to teach them how to use a cord clamp.
Wow, it's amazing.
So together,
you just never think about. You just don't think about it, right? Quick reality check. If you're listening to this and thinking, why does no one ever talk to me like this in my doctor's office? That's because most doctors aren't trained to, nor do they have the infrastructure for it. That's why I started the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective, my new concierge practice where sexual wellness, hormone health, and gynecology actually come together like they're supposed to. No 10-minute visits, no gaslighting, no have a glass of wine, relax. Just evidence-based, shame-free care for women who are done settling for bad sex, brain fog, hot flashes, or feeling invisible. I'm proud to be part of the Ms. Medicine Network, which means your care is rooted in science, not stigma. Find us at www.thegsmcollective.com and book the kind of appointment you wish you had had years ago. Your body called. It wants its power back. Let's go.
Together with a clean birthing kit and a midwifery training, because you need to train the midwives. You need to tell them to please stop using this practice because they didn't even know they just gave the baby tetanus.
Yeah.
Until you treat them.
Yeah.
And the other third most important intervention that we are doing, which I'm so proud of, is that we are the only charity who is giving IV iron to pregnant women.
Wow. Okay.
Because now we know the research that we got it wrong, that the reason of postpartum hemorrhage is actually lack of iron. Your anemic uterus is not going to contract.
Yeah. Yeah.
So PPH is because of anemia and not because of lack of uterotonics.
Yeah. Huh.
You know, so if we have to give, if we have the, her iron to be normal and not to be anemic, her uterus will contract, number one. Pakistan is in the top countries of the world with the biggest stunted growth. Stunted growth is due to lack of development of white matter in an anemic baby. When the mother is anemic, the baby does not receive iron and you need iron for the development of white matter. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest cause of putting Pakistan's babies in the top of the world for stunted growth. So we are the only organization who is giving IV iron to pregnant women and not tell them to take those cheap anemia tablet iron tablets, mm-hmm. which only give them tummy pain. And mm-hmm. they don't eat it. They will not. Have you tried eating a cheap tablet?
Yeah, awful. And they constipate you and all the things, right?
Exactly. She already has enough problems. Then you adding to her problem.
Yeah.
And she has nothing to eat. Remember that.
Yeah.
She has nothing to eat. You know, when you tell her, take it after you eat food, the first meal that she will have in her house, she's going to give it to her children and her husband.
Yeah.
Whatever is left, she will eat it. And that's it. They eat only once. They don't have 3 times a day meal.
Wow.
So when is she going to eat those tablets?
Wow. The poverty is really, that's astounding. That's astounding. You know, alhamdulillah that you're doing well. It's great.
And only with friends and family. And this is my aim in 2026 to hope to have some funding. This is through friends and family. Dr. Samina, we have reached 10,000 women.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those, 8,000 women are alive. And I have an application. We have developed an application. And you can click on the application and every woman's data will be there. These are real numbers. These are real women. Uh-huh. These are real mothers.
Uh-huh.
And the babies, the deaths in the babies is much, much less than the deaths they will see in Pakistan.
That was amazing. Wow.
So we are very proud of our work. And inshallah, you will see it published soon. I'm trying my best to publish it, inshallah.
It's very.
And we want people like you to help us to raise awareness. That's all, you know, we want you to do is to talk about.
Well, you know, during Ramadan, we should put a launch, you know, the launch code. What is it? Launch code.
We are doing that.
Yeah.
And we are doing that. And this time we have.
I'll put it on my website and stuff too when it comes.
Thank you so much. We want you to be our ambassador.
100%.
So we are collecting our ambassadors. And if you would kindly agree to it, we will add you to our WhatsApp group.
Yes.
So all these resources that you need to be an ambassador in terms of what I'm saying, my videos, explanations, whatever you have, we just request you to forward it to your friends who trust you that you are forwarding something good. So if you can do that for us this Ramadan, we will be very good.
Done.
Thank you.
Well, that's amazing, Sadi. I mean, really, it's just astounding that you're doing that. And I'm happy to help in any capacity because I think it's such a meaning.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Let's talk about some of your other work and really about, you know, our understanding of how I've been practicing in the U.S. for over 20 years, but I've done a lot of, you know, international travel and talks abroad. But symptoms are minimized and normalized for women here in the United States. We're talking perimenopause, menopause. Do you think women are delaying even more because of cultural expectations and family expectations in the regions that you practice? I mean, I would think that would just make sense in my head, but like when it comes to like, why is it that women aren't coming to see me? You're a midlife woman. You're carrying the world on your shoulder. You know, you're trying to, you know, take care of kids, maybe high school kids, maybe college kids, maybe parents that are elderly. You know, there's so much that a midlife woman has that we just endure the suffering.
Yes.
But I also think there's an element also in Pakistani culture and Muslim culture and in different cultures where the woman becomes like the matriarch of the family.
Absolutely.
Too, right? Like they have a lot of, which I think is wonderful in terms of the way that women age abroad in that respect, because there's a lot more respect given to them. But don't you think the delay is there because of all these other cultural expectations?
Oh my God, where to start with? You know, you are absolutely right. And it's more in Pakistan, more in UAE, Saudi Arabia, this matriarchal shift that you are talking about, when it happens, the woman becomes the pillar of the household, the you know, the all wisdom, all wise lady, and also the gatekeeper of the tradition. You know, she's all of this, and everybody puts her in that high pedestal. Okay, she has. I would swap that. I said, okay, you are all these three things. I would swap that with strong bones, healthy heart, and clear mind. Because these are the three things you don't have.
Anything.
You know, and 50% of you are going to break a bone, and your whole family who reveres you so much is going to keep on carrying you in wheelchairs and in beds and give you three maids and helpers to take you to the toilet and bring you back because you've got a hip fracture and then you broke your other hip.
Instead of you going out there and getting stronger and, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So something has to change. This is what I tell them that. And then the other thing that we have talked about, especially in Saudi Arabia or Middle East, is that, you know, this word, the vocabulary. Let's start from vocabulary.
Yes, you know, let's start with vocabulary.
We don't. It is so bad that, you know, talking about these things is, first of all, we don't have vocabulary to talk about.
Right.
At least the West has found a huge list of vocabulary to define your symptoms, while over here we are struggling to define menopause. Sinalyas. You start from there. How do you give a diagnosis? Your FSH is 120 and you have got sinalyas.
Which is age of despair, right?
Age of despair, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I will tell you something that so much so, you know, your worth has been linked to your fertility.
Yes.
For ages and ages and ages, how fertile you are, that is your worth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something which I call, I love that word, internalized ageism.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to talk about, oh, come on, we're going to give you HRT, we're going to make your bones, and there is this severe sense of depression inside her, and her heart has just sunk, and she says, she's 49, and she says, so I can't have a baby, doctora. I'm talking about 10
people. Like, yes, you can't have a baby, this is amazing.
Right. And this is so sad that, you know, literally that is what comes. So you are sure I can't have a baby? And the sadness that overtakes her, that now she's going to go home and tell her husband, who's, by the way, planning another lot. So it is culturally acceptable now for him to marry again and have more babies from a younger wife, for him to move on. And to be honest, in their culture, it is accepted. And the men give a lot of respect and everything to all their wives, and she will always be the first wife. And in a lot of cases, they do love them as their children's mother and everything. But he has to move on because he feels that he has to have more children and everything. And yes, she's accepting of it as a cultural reason, but do you think she's happy about it? I will never
No.
use the word happy about it.
Be happy about it.
So these are the additional things that I have to deal with in these cultures, which I'm, you know, I understand. And I always, the different thing that I do is I bring in the man to have a discussion. Number one, I always try my best to, which is very shocking for them as to why does Doctora want me in the room?
Yeah.
I said, no, I want you in the room, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where I discover the love that they have for them, which is a lovely thing to see also, because, you know, once she told me, oh, he may marry again. So I'm like, I want to meet them.
I never seen this night. This is
exactly.
Put him on the-
But they turn out to be such lovely men who just want, you know, so you see that also very much. But it is very important that we address exactly what is going on in our head. I can't give her babies, so I have to give that bad news, let that news settle, which is like an accepted and given for many cultures. But over here, you know, it's very like much like that.
How many kids do you think the average people are having in Saudi these days?
So that is decreasing. So I would have said 20, you know, maybe 10 years ago. Yes, they have huge families. But I will give you my own experience for last 3 years. Only in 3 years, 2023, I joined Riyadh, 23.
Uh-huh.
24, 25, and now 26, I will be completing my 3 years. The day I've been running hormone replacement therapy clinic since in 10 years in the UAE and 20 years since UK. So in 3 years ago, I would say, I think you will benefit from hormone replacement therapy. And the shock of it that you are giving me something that will give me cancer and you are confidently advising me to do that. So from that shift within a matter of, I would say, 2.5, 3 years has changed drastically.
Good.
So now they are very open to discussions for hormone replacement therapy. And at the same time, to answer your question, the children per head per women has also declined a lot because women are doing more work and they are deciding to, you know, not have as many children as before.
Oh, that's good. I think, and I feel like this, you know, the shift obviously has been happening here for the last few years too, where the association isn't as, you know, severe as it used to be from the WHI, which I'm glad to hear that it's kind of transferred over in your arenas as well.
Yes.
When we talk about perimenopause and how it presents, are people chalking it up to it's just stress or it's just aging, or like, or what kind of symptoms are differently presenting from you that we would see different?
So absolutely, we have research to prove. There's a very good paper also that they did about it. I talk about it in my talks. The Asian woman does not present with hot flushes and night sweats and sleep disturbances. The Asian woman, top complication, top presentation in Asian woman is body aches, joint pains, and mood, and low mood.
Right.
I promise you, sadness. That's why they call it Similias. That it's just a feeling, a horrible feeling. I think in the West, women have other things to do to cheer them up. So they may be having a bad night with hot flushes and night sweats and whatever. But the mates are there in the morning and they're going to go for a run or a walk or a jog or dance in the evening or something like that. I think that's my interpretation. But physiologically, these women do not get as many hot flushes and night sweats as the Western women get. But the joint pain, every single part of the body hurts. It's very more common. And there's a paper also about it.
Because like there's this general feeling of temperature dysregulation too. Like some people just feel hotter than normal. But if your temperature, you know, climate-wise too, is like much warmer there. And so that, you know, sometimes you would expect people to maybe feel even hotter than they usually do. I mean, I would say that here, of course, people come for vasomotor symptoms, but one of the biggest symptoms I think women are coming for now is mood disruption. Really, mood is huge, right? Or just not feeling like myself. I think that's like a big issue that we see as well. Most people associate, you know, menopause and perimenopause with vasomotor symptoms. But I think when we start telling them that their new onset anxiety and depression and all of these things are related to hormonal flux, then it's not only empowering, but it makes them want to come, you know, get some therapy. So I do think, do you think that that has a a factor at all as well?
Yes, definitely. I mean, they're in AC all the time. So everybody talks about hot countries. And I talk about my jackets. I've never worn so many jackets in UAE and Saudi Arabia as I've worn them in UK.
Yeah, this is true.
So they're always in lot of AC all the time. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, the ones that are truly tribal, the nomads that are there, you know, but they are strong women.
Yes.
They are, bless them. Nobody even reaches to them to say how you are feeling. And unfortunately, then that is expressed as psychological symptoms of anger, rage, crying, emotion, and manipulation, because you don't understand what is going on with you. So you, and nobody is explaining to you. So you're going to take it out on your family, isn't it?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, the mother-in-law culture, as I said, every complaint about mother-in-laws that I get is just a crying out loud for having a HRT, you know, indication for
that's
HRT.
Totally true.
That's what
and that's sort of the stigmas around, you know, even having a mother-in-law live with you and all the things is that, oh, she's going to be demanding and yell at you and, you know. But I think you're totally right that they're just being undertreated. I always joke and say, you know, we have like this joke that like the Karens of the United States,